Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts. Have you get your podcasts. We appreciate that. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you a hater. It is our day for interviews, and lucky for us, Mina Kimes is just hanging around the office and decided, hey, she'll come sit down and join us. It was greatly appreciated.
I am here for a reason. I'm not just hanging around.
I mean, it's okay for you to hang around. Like, you do actually work here. Like, for most of the people who are listening to this, if they're just hanging around, I got to call them folks. But you, you know, you got a badge. You can get through all that stuff.
True, true. So I'm in New York for a couple of days, usually based in LA. I like being in this office. It's very energetic.
It is actually a lot of fun. I readily admit that I was prepared for, like, a sociology experiment, basically, when they said all these different shows are going to be here. Because if we're going to be honest, it's a fairly, like, significant ego collection that would be walking around here and people who aren't necessarily around each other all the time. So I wanted to see how it would go. And it's actually been pretty peaceful in that regard. Hmm. And just like I see Stephen A. Smith 5 days a week.
That's what I was just about to say. I want to spend a week in here as sort of an anthropologist because Stephen A. didn't start here, right? So no. He was added, I don't know, a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
That's like dropping an apex predator into an ecosystem. Like it has, the trickle effect must be enormous.
It's interesting because it was like, it's a layering, right? So GitUp was here first. And right. So then after that, we moved here with High Noon, which you got to remember, we moved here with High Noon when the show was on at noon, right? So we'd start getting here while Get Up was on, and then they would come out. But it was really just us that was here. And then you look up one day, and Katie Nolan and her crew is here. And that is a more significant crew than I had expected that it would wind up being. Because I look over, and it's like, yo, it's like 12 people over there, right?
Young people.
Yes. And so, like, we've added a new level. Then First Take came, and so you get Stephen A. and all of that. And so now, and then Reality will be here. Ooh. He's actually already here, but the whole full-on operation will be here, like, on November 5th in that way. So everybody is here. And so you get the athletes that come in and out, you know, the people that they're the same for us as they are for everybody else. People we see on TV that we never actually see in person. Now, they're kind of bouncing in and out of here. I have enjoyed it in that way.
Reality, you and I both know him well from doing Around the Horn. That's an entirely different sort of animal to drop into
ecosystem. And you're dropping him in solo because it's not like he comes with like a bunch of surrounding people. The thing with Tony is always show.
Yep.
No matter what it is. Tony is like the Tony you see on TV. You get that Tony at a restaurant. You get that Tony wherever it is.
It's a lot of positivity.
Yes. He's so positive. I love that dude. Love that dude.
Super upbeat.
And Stephen A. Like, Stephen A. has been like wild helpful and like unsolicited, just being nice to us, advice about like how to handle your show and career stuff and everything else. Yeah. No. Like this is. It's like been a real cool setup here at this office in a way that I did not necessarily expect it to be.
How do I get Stephen A. to take me under his wing?
You know what? I bet you hang around here long enough.
Just sit around.
It can happen. It can happen.
Let it happen naturally.
Yeah, no, really, man. He came in one day. Me and Pablo had just gotten done with the show. We're doing makeup and Stephen A. comes in because Stephen A. is always here, like all the time. And he was just like, yeah, you know what you need to do, man? You need to get those ratings every day. You need to look at those. You need to see what was working on what day. You know, like I check that stuff every single day.
Really?
And I get a look at everything that's going on, and that's something that you're going to need. Like, we didn't ask him to do that. Just out of nowhere before he went to go do something else.
The mayor.
Yes.
He's the mayor of this village.
Yes, and you can hear him through it. All the walls. All the walls. Like, if I'm sitting out there at the desk and Stephen A. is in there doing the radio, I ain't got to turn the radio off.
People would pay for this, like an ESPN Plus over-the-top program that's just a 24-hour feed of Stephen A. in the office.
Yeah. Oh, man, me and him had I wouldn't call it a screaming match, but, you mean, like, I was having a fervent argument, shall we say, with him about Marvin Lewis while he's on his commercial break. It was like standing in the newsroom, so it was like me and him on opposite sides of these computers going back and forth. Kellerman is like standing over here to my right. Pablo's right there and everybody's just like, yeah, no, this is a real cool office. And I've never actually worked in an office like in a way that matters. So this is neat.
Were you pro or anti Marvin?
I am pro.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
I am pro. Here's why I'm pro Marvin Lewis. I know why Marvin Lewis still has that job.
Because they're cheap.
And he gets along with that guy.
Yeah.
Like I don't think people recognize that the job he has is actually really difficult.
And 100%.
The success that they've had is actually against the odds. So, like, I get the argument. They haven't made the playoffs in all these years. You go find somebody who can. I get that. Like, I'm not saying anybody's wrong. I'm just telling you they're going to get some. Like, he is probably a better coach than you realize he is.
Yes.
That would be the best way to put it.
I'm with you. I mean, it's the cheapest franchise in the NFL. There's a reason why they recruit so heavily in state, because they don't want to travel. Like, it's insane. You don't think of these things with an NFL franchise. They're very unique.
They are. And he is. He's the owner and he's the general manager,
yes.
Which is a part that you can't forget.
Not
but
okay.
He's not like an actual football dude, like his dad, Paul Brown, all-time great football coach. That's not what this dude is.
Nope.
But he's the weird cheap, because he is that cheap, but he hasn't sold the stadium naming rights because it's named after his dad.
I actually think they're a pretty good team this year, too.
I do, too.
Yeah.
I do, too.
They're balanced.
Yeah. Assuming the crazy man doesn't get himself tossed out the league.
Oh, perfect. Yeah. I thought you were talking about Dalton for a second.
Oh,
it's like
no.
The crazy man?
No.
Yeah, he should be. This is a whole other...
He's nuts.
Yeah, he's not well.
I mean, I guess we need to be careful about using terminology like that, except
yeah.
I do feel like football teams based around the idea that you're going to like, no matter what, you're going to have one or two dudes out of 53 to do that job.
Yes.
That a little different.
An enforcer.
Yeah, like you can't really survive without them. But... And they figured out with him, we could tell him to stop doing that stuff, but then he's not any good, right? Like, we can't tell him to think. We just have to tell him to go do stuff.
Right.
But the stuff he does is indefensible.
I don't want to implicate CT. I always get uncomfortable when that's implicated and we don't really know what the cause is. I think some guys, and I feel this way when I watch Grayson Allen trip someone, when I watch Manny Machado nick a dude's ankle. Some guys just can't help themselves. I think. And whether that's muscle memory or just the way they grew up playing their sport, it's like it you can't change that behavior at a certain point.
Well, like, here's what it was interesting about a guy like that, because that drive against Pittsburgh in the playoffs where Burfict took Antonio Brown out and then Pac-Man Jones and Joey Porter had their whole thing, right? And that, by the way, was when I was really like, okay, I'm totally team Marvin Lewis here, because what is he supposed to do to stop this?
Nothing.
Right?
Nothing.
It's not like this dude is out here and people are just walking all over him. No, this is just who they are. And so Pac-Man had that meltdown and then went on the Instagram, and didn't he have the meltdown?
Oh,
and then,
God.
And then 10 minutes later, it was like nothing ever happened. And I was like, yo, this is what they asked Marvin to do. Right? This is what he is asked to endure as coach. And you worried about the fact they ain't win a playoff game with AJ McCarron as the quarterback?
He knows where the bodies are buried. Like, that was that contract when everyone was like, well, that's crazy that they didn't fire him. No, it wasn't. Like, Marvin Lewis knows things that you and I don't know about the inner workings of that team. And good for him. You know, good for him.
Well, also, don't forget this. They rebooted in 2011, right, when they drafted Dalton and they drafted Green. They basically fired him and rehired him.
Yes.
They were like, we're going to do a rebuild, and now we're going to hire you to be the person to do the rebuild. And then they made the playoffs a bunch of times. Oh, yeah, that's the other thing. His quarterback is Andy Dalton.
Right. Mike McCarthy has much more of a case. There's more of a case to fire him than Marvin Lewis. How can you say, oh, man, he's wasting the prime of Andy Dalton's career? Like, what? He's also lost a bunch of coordinators, excellent coordinators, by the way, over the years, and – that he's still persisted, and actually they've got Lazor now, who's done a really nice job with that offense.
Yeah, and I thought he stunk when he was with the Dolphins.
You know, I find with coordinators, a lot of times you can't really predict whether or not they're going to flourish in the next team, especially when it's guys who also are head coaches and then come back to being coordinators. Often they never should have been head coach in the first place.
Right.
They never should have, you know, so. But if you watch that offense, they're doing a lot of really interesting creative things, and, you know, he has the personnel finally.
Right. Speaking of offense. I want to run something by you here, a little statistical stuff I was looking up the other day.
Okay.
I was on Football Outsiders. I do the DVOA.
Love DVOA.
Right, which I conceptually understand, but I don't really know what the numbers mean. But I do understand conceptually. And so people know, DVOA works where plays are measured by what percentage of the, like, yards to go that
success,
you gain. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So, like, if it's first and 10 and you get 8, you know, like, that's what we're looking at here. The Buffalo Bills are third in defensive DVOA.
That's crazy.
Thus far. Third. Their defense is really good. You know what their overall DVOA is?
30th?
Dead last.
Dead last!
Dead last!
Wow, worse than the Raiders. Wow.
That's how bad. How bad do
That's
you
crazy.
Have to be on offense to have the third best defense in the league and still be the worst team in the NFL?
To put that in perspective, I don't have it in front of me, but I know the Kansas City Chiefs have probably the best or second best offensive DVOA and then near the bottom. However, in overall DVOA, they're still near the top.
Right.
Right. So that's, you know, it's not like an average situation. That's how bad the Bills are on offense.
They are so bad. I'm going to put a number to it. I put a number to it. I saw this the other day when I looked at it. Like, I was just really blown away by what the numbers were. But the gap between them and the number 31 team in offensive DVOA is so high. Okay, here it is. I don't really understand what the numbers mean. But the number 30 team is the Browns. Their offensive DVOA is negative 24.1. Number 31 is negative 31.3, which is the Cardinals, right? Huh. The Bills, negative 53.4.
That has to be on pace for the lowest in decades.
So the Rams and Chiefs are 1 and 2, and they're at 33 and 32, yeah. Right? So they're at positive 33 and positive 32. The Bills are at negative 53. So how good, as good as the Chiefs are, the Bills are 1.5 times worse.
I believe Josh Allen has more yards per carry than yards per attempt.
Yes, he does.
Right?
Yes. Yes, he does. Yeah. So how much worse is this going to get now that Derek Anderson is starting over to Peterman? Or does it get worse?
No. Literally, mathematically, it's not possible to get worse. It's not possible. It's not possible. For the listeners, so you've become one of the people in my life that I text things about football that I can't say in public.
Yes.
Welcome to that road. I'm sorry.
I have to do this with other people too. It's totally forgiven.
Well, I feel like though that relationship began with the dawn of the Peterman.
Yes,
right?
Yes. Yes.
So I did a story last year on Tyrod Taylor, and to hear Bills fans tell it, I said he was the best quarterback in his. I did not, but I did say he was very good in 2015, 2016, and considered the possibility that he might not be terrible, that he might be an average NFL starting quarterback, that he could be better than that, perhaps, although he obviously wasn't by the end and hasn't been in Cleveland. Okay. Then the benching happens, and that's when I feel like you and I start talking
yes.
pretty heavily about
yes.
the Bills' offense,
yes.
because it was so perplexing for a zillion reasons, one of which was that they were playing, I remember the Chargers, and this was when the Chargers had Joey Bosa, and it was such a blatantly terrible idea.
Yes.
And so during that game, I think you got probably 1,000 texts from me.
Oh, yeah. Remember, I was on the way somewhere for the actual. I did not see the Peterman era live. I was riding from Harlem to Brooklyn to go to the Barclays Center, and the first half transpired while I was in the car, and that dude threw 5 interceptions from my house to the Nets game. It was mind-blowing. And then they had to go look at Tyrod. Who had to know this was preposterous from the beginning and be like, you think you could come back out here? Because I personally want to see, like, what's the NFL record for interceptions in a game? Has anybody ever looked that up?
I think that came up during this game, and he didn't break it. I think it may have been like one or two more.
Yeah, but they should have given him a shot, right? Like, when history is so close.
Okay, I want to throw out a defense of Nathan Peterman. I'm the only person.
I'm here for it.
This is okay. So I watched a lot of the Bills preseason, mostly because I wanted to see Josh Allen, another quarterback that Bills fans have been very angry at me
yes.
about for thinking that he was a very high variance draft pick and that it was too risky to take him where they did.
Yes.
That's how I felt. Not that he would be terrible, but like I thought Josh Rosen was a significantly better prospect than him. I still think he's a better quarterback.
Right.
Okay, that said, I watched all the preseason games. Nathan Peterman was really good in the Bills preseason.
Right? Yeah, you told me that.
And then you're playing twos and threes, although I think there was a game where he was playing ones. I don't remember if it was week three or anything, but I think he has some sort of mental, like whatever the opposite of a gamer is.
Right.
Like a dude who can't take tests, you know,
right.
like a smart
yes.
kid who shows up and just flunks it. I really think he has that problem.
I think it's a fair question, right? Because, I mean, like that pick six he threw.
Terrible.
Was so, and not only was it terrible,
shuddered.
You could see it coming,
yep.
right? Like not even, you don't have to be no film study dude or whatever it was. You saw boom, boom, boom throw and it was like, oh yeah, this is head to the house. Like, and sure enough, it went to the house. I also think it was another awful Kelvin Benjamin route, if I'm not mistaken on that play.
He's just straight up not trying.
Yeah.
Anymore,
he's
which is
so bad. He's so
amazing.
Bad. But see, the thing with the Bills that got me about where they were with Taylor, we thought the tank began last season.
Yes.
And then they
tried.
Yeah, and then they were a legitimate playoff contender. And your thing about Taylor and your piece, the thing that I think that they missed was that it was actually, as much as anything else, a thought experiment. Because
yes.
if you just strictly use passing stats for Taylor, you can make the argument the passing stats make him look worse than he is because they don't account for the impact on the running game, but also that they made him look better than he was because he took a lot of sacks. And that becomes its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, his problem is, if you're not butt naked open, he's not going to throw you the ball.
Yes, he holds on to it too long. And I think having watched him in Anthony Lynn's offense, that I maintain that he was very good in 2015, 2016. And I really think he is a quarterback. Watching him in Cleveland this year, especially those first couple games, I think he got hurt in the second one, though. I feel like he I don't want to say broken, but I think he's one of those quarterbacks who tried to force himself to play a different style, and it might have permanently affected him.
Right.
And I do think he's overly cautious. He's too conservative. He has always held onto the ball too long. But he used to be more adventurous as a runner. He was in offenses that were better designed for his skill set. Now, all that said, the Bills have the number three offense in the NFL. If you have an offense that good, you don't need a great quarterback to win.
Right.
You need an average quarterback who takes care of the football, which is what
he was.
So,
right.
I mean, we're seeing the same thing play out in Jacksonville, but that's a whole other story. Like, watching the Bills lose against the Texans this last week, a average to below average quarterback who does not turn the ball over would have won that game.
Right. And that is exactly what he was. But no, they wanted the ceiling in Buffalo, right? The sky was the limit as they saw it. Except I think we've seen this with Alex Smith at his various stops. We've seen this to a degree with Kirk Cousins, though he has giant numbers. Hey, man, there aren't that many good quarterbacks out there, and Tyrod's about at the level where you hold on to that unless you're sure you got something. Right. They had to Peter Man, right? Like they was not as though it was like, look, we're starting the future right now. They're just like, hey, let's see what that guy can do. And he threw five interceptions, and then they drafted Josh Allen, and at once with Josh Allen, from the college stuff, it was like, oh, I see why someone would take him in the first round.
Yes.
I totally see why that's a horrific idea, but I can see why you decided to do it. He's really big, athletic, and he has some great plays that are out there. He stinks. He's so bad. This does not look like recoverable bad.
Well, and again, yeah, like I said, I wasn't high on him as a prospect, but I especially wasn't high on him in that situation, right? Because not only was it a bad offensive line, not only did they have zero weapons, but you knew they were going to start a quarterback very soon, right? So maybe you put Josh Allen in a sit for a year, learn behind someone, he's that kind of guy.
Right.
Josh Rosen was a much more pro-ready, it's a jargon, but whatever, prospect, which is why I thought he would have been a nicer fit for that team. Now, of course, Josh Allen, he's got like a torn UCL or something.
Yeah.
All I know is James Andrews is involved, and that's terrifying.
That's funny, a Tommy John for the quarterback, because throwing a football is not as taxing as throwing a baseball, so that injury, I guess, like, is not the same as it
is. Have you heard of it? A quarterback with that?
I have not.
It's weird.
This is the first that I've heard of it. But hey, if there's anything that boy got to spare, it's arm strength. It is entirely possible that this could, you ever see that movie Rookie of the Year about the kid played for the Cubs and started throwing 100 mile an hour fastballs? Maybe this could be the obvious. I mean, they seem the opposite for Josh Allen, where now he can't throw it as hard, and suddenly, you know, he can actually connect with people.
Oh, the reverse.
Right. Like, his accuracy gets better as a result, because he's just throwing that bad boy anywhere.
And if you're a Bills fan, earmuffs, they draft Justin Herbert next year and turn Josh Allen into a tight end.
Ooh.
Or a fullback.
Ooh, I mean, at some point you do have to start wondering if it was.
He'd be fantastic. Have you seen that dude run?
He can run.
He can hurdle people.
Let me tell you this. People try to change positions with Lamar Jackson. I said this from the jump. Why are we not talking about Josh Allen as a tight end?
He'd be amazing.
He'd be a
top five tight end.
And he seems like a cool dude, right? he does like the Peter man. He seems like such a nice young man.
Did you see the quotes from him?
Yeah, that's when I was like, it's over for you, man.
The God.
Yeah. Once he started talking about this doesn't define me as a person, and I'm like, oh, man, it's a wrap. Because, one, I'm glad you have that perspective, but the fact that you've already reached a point where that's what you got to say, no, it's over. And they can't put you out there because you can't go tell these other dudes. Like, I remember when they benched E.J. Manuel in Buffalo, and Steve White, he made a great point about this. He was like, they're going to have to bench him because he's out here getting dudes hurt. Right, like he was throwing them hospital balls, and you can't keep there's going to be a mutiny if this happens. The problem is, to prevent the mutiny of Buffalo this time, they are going to Derek Anderson, and this isn't going to be good either.
My favorite Derek Anderson memory is in 2016 when Cam Newton didn't wear a tie, and Ron Rivera benched him. And then on the very first play, Derek Anderson threw an interception, thereby undermining Ron Rivera for the rest of his life.
Yes.
You can't punish a quarterback after that. You're done.
That was like, I remember that happening.
I'm so happy.
And see, what you got to get, I work radio in North Carolina. Now, I didn't work it during the Cam era, but I have a lot of friends who did. And until the very end, there were people calling up saying, why don't they just give Derek Anderson a chance? Like, there was a perpetual Derek Anderson movement around Charlotte and the South Carolina stuff, and it even got all the way up to Raleigh. Derek Anderson should be the starter over Cam Newton. Like, some people are just dedicated to this cause, right? And I find it to be somewhat interesting because if Derek Anderson were playing behind Tyrod Taylor, for example, they would have been like, the argument before was that we need to go see if the young guy could do anything. It would have been something else about Derek Anderson to get him in the game. And now he's in the game, and I feel pretty confident. Derek Anderson didn't take this job to play quarterback. Derek Anderson wasn't interested in playing.
He didn't want this. No. They traded AJ McCarron for a fifth.
They did.
Just want to.
They traded AJ McCarron for
thing
a fifth.
That happened.
Right. After having seen Josh Allen and the Peterman.
Yeah.
Right? Like, Josh Allen.
They knew what they had.
Yeah, I guess overall we don't do this anymore, but it's okay to sit a quarterback for a year. Like, they used to do this all the time. It's okay to sit. The Chiefs, they just did it. It seemed to work out pretty well. Because Mahomes still has, by the way, quietly, a lot of the problems that we thought he might have, which is he's got some YOLO in him, boy. And luckily he's throwing to wide open dudes. But he got a lot of YOLO.
Do you think the Chiefs, so they got a third for Tyrod, which actually is a pretty good return. Do you think they, it's easy now with hindsight to say they should have held on to him, but strategically, do you think that was an error?
For Buffalo?
Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry, not the Chiefs, Buffalo.
Yeah. Just because their defense is too good to put out an embarrassing product.
Right.
And unfortunately for Tyrod, and I had a problem when Virginia Tech did this, because we go back with this since he was in college.
They would do the back and forth?
Yeah, well, he was a five-star recruit, but see, they didn't do back and forth. What they did was, our offensive line is really, really bad. Mm. Therefore, Sean Glennon, less talented older brother of Mike, cannot survive behind this offensive line. So there was one year, 2008? Yeah, 2008, they were like, we're redshirting Tyrod this year. They went out there and played one game and were like, okay, we can't. Yeah. The line is so bad. He could at least give you a guy that could survive, perhaps, out there. So the pick they got, I get it if he's not your future, but let's see what this looks like at the end of the year when you've asked all these dudes to put in a full season where they had no chance to win because of the quarterback.
Buffalo, their defensive coordinator is Lizzie Frazier, I believe. Another example of a guy who, had some struggles as a head coach and then suddenly is awesome. Is doing the thing he was always, the Wade Phillips kind of phenomenon.
Right.
Sean McDermott's a defensive guy. At some point, you've got to wonder if there's anyone there who can coach or identify quarterbacks. And,
right.
You know what I mean? Because they got this, you're right, the defense is amazing. And not only they're amazing, they're turning guys like Lorenzo Alexander, who's, 55 years old at this point, into one of the top three sack leaders in the NFL over the course of two seasons. If you're doing that, that is such a waste.
Right.
It's hard to watch.
Well, I guess I look at everything that they've got going there, and I ask, if you got a win now roster everywhere else, I don't understand how you go with the projectiest of the quarterbacks, right? Yeah, no matter who you are, you had to look at that as a project. I think about this. Cam Newton in 2011 absolutely was a project, right? Actually turned out to be a paradigm-shifting draft pick because suddenly all your excuses about the got to run a pro offense and all that stuff went totally out the window.
Mm-hmm.
If that dude could figure it out and play under center and all that stuff. Okay, boom. That was gone. They took the dude with the least chance of being good when Rosen was right there.
And put him in the worst situation in the NFL.
Yes.
That's the thing. I mean, even if you say, okay, well, we thought, he looked in the preseason, he has a skill set, we think we can coach him up, fine. You know what you have around him.
Yes.
Right? I look at Baker, Sam Darnold, even Rosen, although his situation's not great either and that is causing some problems.
Right.
It's such a bad setup for a rookie quarterback.
Yes.
I mean, how is this not foreseeable for him?
Right. One who's never thrown for 2,000 yards. What is there to throw for 2,000 yards? Actually, he may have thrown for two. Let me be fair. I don't think he threw for two.
Do you bench him the rest of the year? Or, keep him out with, quote-unquote, injuries?
Yeah. But as long as you can. Because, how long can you keep starting Derek Anderson? That's the thing. They have a bunch of guys you can't play. You just can't do that. And people ask why, and it's because you can't. So that's where I'm lost. I don't know when you put... So, what option that you have? There's no dude on this. Well, okay, there's one, but they're not going to get him. But there's no dude on the street that you could just bring in now and think, okay, well, this will be better than, say, Derek Anderson.
Yeah, and you don't want to win at this point.
No,
you got to get that Justin Herbert.
No,
just kidding.
No, yeah. Have you? Do you watch the college guys?
A little bit.
I haven't seen him, and Haskins is the one that everybody's talking to me about now, and I just haven't seen either of them play.
I've seen a lot of Herbert just because I watch a lot of Pac-12 football. Mm-hmm. I've been pretty impressed by him. I'd say of the guys going next year, I was not super high on Stidham. Even going into the season, I haven't been impressed by him. Herbert has a lot of the tools. My one concern is that he's way too tall.
Oh, how tall is he?
I read that he was 6'7", and for me, if you go over 6'6", no. It's like game over, right?
Yeah.
I'm very fascinated by this question as a fan of a team that once employed Dan McGuire.
Yes.
Do you think, so good quarterbacks in the NFL pretty much top out at 6'6".
Even that's pushing it.
That's like Flacco, I think Nick Foles maybe.
Yeah.
But after that, you get to Brock Osweiler territory.
Scott Mitchell.
Do you think that that quarterbacks stop being good at that height because of selection, because the good dudes play basketball if you're that tall? Or do you think it's something about the motion and like the target size and you're, thrown from too high or something?
Yeah, I think that the margins are so tight on all that stuff that after 6'7", you're like side to side, like guys that are coming in, I think maybe that is what it is, but you're right. 6'7" is where, I don't think this is going to work, but there's no reasonable, but the terrible stuff that Brock Osweiler does, I feel like I can't blame that on height. Like, I feel like he could be 6'3", and he'd still be short hopping these out routes.
I'd rather have a 5'11 guy than a 6'7 guy.
Yeah, see, that's interesting.
I know GM in the NFL would agree with me, but I'm convinced.
I'm not sure, because we got more 5'11 guys out here than 6'7s.
Yeah.
Right? Like, we do have that. You got Russell Wilson. There's
Baker, Brees are around there.
Yep.
Barely taller than that.
The only thing, though, and we're going to see with Baker, but other than Drew Brees, all those little short guys do have little short guy problems, though.
Sure.
This is not just, and I feel, because people hate it. It doesn't matter how tall you are, says the 5'9 man. And I understand that. But there are legitimate impediments to success.
But you're a striver, right? And as a very tall man, you should understand this. When you're male and you're very tall, you don't have to try at certain things
correct.
In your life.
That's
when
correct.
You're a 5'11 quarterback, you've been trying since day one.
Yes.
Of course you're going to come into the NFL and outwork everyone. That's why I should be a GM. Listen to me. This is brilliant.
All my life I had to fight. Somebody called my radio show once and had the best line about being short. He said he was short. And he was like, being short is a constant fight. A constant fight for credibility.
Credibility.
Right? He's like, you always have to prove yourself when you come in there. But like all those, the problems they got though is, passes getting batted down. Like Michael Vick,
that's
a big
tough.
Part of the Michael Vick problem. They're knocking his passes down all the time. So like it does matter, but then you get to 6'7" and this is too much. No, I don't.
Jangly.
But it is good to be tall, man. like as you say this and I just stop and think about it for a second. You're right. There's just a lot of things that I don't really have to, consider on these things. I'm the skinniest person in the world.
I am a woman who covers football. I am the 5'10 quarterback of our world, right? So I relate more to the Russells and the Bakers and the Drews.
I do like Baker Mayfield. I like his get down.
I love
it. I like his get down. Like Russell Wilson has just always been such a weirdo.
Other theory. Baker Mayfield is too cool to be a good quarterback. Because which of the quarterbacks are cool?
That is true. When's the last time we had a legitimately cool quarterback?
I have been around some quarterbacks now because of my job, and I like some of the. I love Tyrod's a wonderful human being. He's not cool.
Yeah.
I guess Rodgers is kind of cool.
Yeah, Cam is just high variance on whether you like him.
Yes.
Right. Fair.
But
he's not. But he's not cool like Mayfield is.
No. Mayfield seems legit. Like, Mayfield seems like if he came into this office, the aforementioned ecosystem, he would immediately rise to the top. Everybody would want to be around him. Like, he has that magnetism.
Yeah, I tell you this, though. I ain't humbling myself before nobody that ain't 6 feet tall. Like, that's far than I'm willing. Like, I'll be the one that's too cool to be like Baker is that guy. I'll dap him up. Like, I ain't going to be over here hating or nothing like that. But I can't be humbling myself in that way. I'm not prepared for that. I used to be short. I don't know if you know that. I was 5'4".
What do you mean?
I was 5'4" at the end of 10th grade.
So that's when you...
And I was 6'4" at the end of freshman
year.
That's
so early that's not...
Nah, but it's still, man, like I still had to do 2 years of high school as a little dude, right? Mm. So I understand where them cats is coming from. I understand what their pain is, where their difficulties come from. And I just feel like, you just got to make peace with what it is. And once you make peace with what it is, everything is cool. I see short dudes out here winning every day, man.
Yeah.
Every single day. And you know what? The only ones that mess it up are the ones that can't shake the thought that they short, man. Like, I'm skinny. Like I say, I'm the skinniest person in the world. I ain't stopping my get down. Ain't gonna stop me from getting busy.
You have to embrace it. 100%.
Hold on to what you are. Hold on to what you are. All right, we'll be back to talk about how rough it is for NFL defenses these days. But first, guys, you ever had a made-to-measure suit? It fits so much better than what you get off the rack. And Indochino is the world's most exciting made-to-measure menswear company. They make suits and shirts to your exact measurements for an unparalleled fit and comfort. Guys love the wide selection of high-quality fabrics and colors to choose from and the option to personalize the details, including like the lapel, the lining, the pockets, the buttons, even putting in your own monogram. I got some Indochino shirts, and they are fantastic. Now, you got two choices here. You could visit a stylist at our showroom or measure yourself at home and shop online at Indochino.com. You choose your design customization, submit your measurements with your choices, relax, and your suit's made professionally, tailored, and mailed to you in a couple of weeks. Now, this week, my listeners get any premium Indochino suit for just $359 at Indochino.com when entering BOMANI at checkout. That's 50% off the regular price for a made-to-measure premium suit. Plus, shipping is free. That's Indochino.com, promo code BOMANI for any premium suit for just $359 and free shipping. It's an incredible deal for a premium made-to-measure suit. Indochino is also expanding into casual clothing. Your made-to-measure chinos will quickly become your go-to pant, pairing as easily with a suit jacket as they do with a sweater. And they'll be good at any time of year for any occasion, from boardroom meetings to Sunday brunches. Indochino's at an introductory price of $79 US. All right, now, the other thing is, we had just talked about the Bills and how bad their offense is. I think a part of their offense being so bad that we're not adequately discussing is how hard it is to have a bad offense in 2018.
They are bringing down the numbers. Like, imagine how much higher the numbers would be if the Bills were average.
They are the ultimate outlier, easy. Right? Like, it's so easy to have an offense in the NFL now, where teams are just, like, Belichick, I think, was a pioneer in this, and everybody just caught up, where he just gave up on stopping yards inside, you know, outside the 20. Like we can't, the rules make it where this is impossible. We're just going to get you in the red zone and we're going to try to stop you from scoring. And now I guess everybody is either on purpose or just, you know, by accident realizing this same thing, but the Buffalo Bills still cutting 8 yards.
There's, you mentioned DVOA. I also look at EPA, expected points added. And I saw a chart yesterday that it's like a line chart with an X and a Y. All the teams are kind of clustered in the middle. You know, you've got the Saints and the Bills are literally like 3 feet behind on this chart in the lower left corner. It's so crazy what an outlier they are right now in terms of offense.
And on EP, I was looking at this on defense, that there are only like six teams with positive expected points on defense right now. Like everybody, every defense stinks.
Okay. I'm obsessed with this question right now because I think last season when everybody was panicking about how bad football was, I found it deeply annoying. Because to me, it seemed very obvious that we were in the middle of this long-term trend towards offense that had been going on since the 2011 CBA, since some of the rules that were changed to make it easier for pass quarterbacks and wide receivers. Then we have this aberration last year where suddenly scoring drops, passing drops, competitive games, whatever. And everybody was freaking out, and it was very obvious to me that it was just a few quarterback injuries, a few quarterbacks not being good, and it wasn't going to last. So, which proved true. So that said, I'm a little bit worried about this year saying, oh, this is it. We're done. Defense is over. Offense forever. I hesitate to draw those conclusions about football given how much is contingent on like three or four quarterbacks being good and pulling numbers in a certain direction. That said, there are a lot of factors that don't appear to be changing that do favor offenses and probably will forever. For a long time.
If you put the force field around the quarterbacks and around receivers, you have fundamentally altered like what the game is. Because a significant part of this game is you have to entertain the possibility that someone might kill you.
Well, I think the receivers bit is actually more important than the quarterbacks bit. Because we keep talking about roughing the passer. I was like, oh, you can't. Actually, I pulled up how quickly quarterbacks are getting rid of the ball quicker than ever. Which doesn't, you know, necessarily mean that it's just defenders afraid to hit him. However, I was watching the Seahawks Rams game last week, which was a great game. But the one thing that caught it was in CenturyLink, and obviously the Seahawks defense looks very different from how it used to. There's no longer Cam Chancellor. Like, people don't understand. Against Cam Chancellor, dudes just wouldn't go over the middle, which is why he's one of my favorite football players of all time. Right. the Rams were just using between the numbers over the middle of the field into that immediate area was just open season. Pass, 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 pass. You used to not be able to pass it there. Now, it's not just the Rams, but they are certainly, they do it the most. You can do whatever you want in the middle of the field because guys aren't afraid of getting hit. And yeah. It is a massive, massive change.
Yeah, well, that changes everything, right? Like, this is part of it. Like, part of the intrigue of this game. Like, the insanity of football is part of what makes it compelling. And so everybody has a great point on the need to make football safer. That is not necessarily going to make football a more entertaining product, right? Like, right. I think, and people need to be honest about it, and it's okay to admit it. We like the violence. Like, we've learned to not like the violence, but we liked it. This is why we're here in part. But man, I don't enjoy super duper heavy offensive football.
You don't?
Football.
Do you think that that's the mainstream opinion? Because I'm very curious.
I don't know. This is
the NFL doesn't.
Yeah, the NFL doesn't think that. But I've never seen anyone who was like, "Yo, I like this a lot more now that the passing is up in this way."
Ratings, you know, yeah, would suggest.
Ratings would, but I wonder how much of the ratings is about also the other branding stuff and everything else that they do with regards to the NFL. Like, I wonder, the running back used to be, like, really the star, right? Even as the quarterback was what it was, right?
Yes.
But in terms of, like, who you wanted to be when you went outside to play football, you wanted to be the running back, right?
Mm.
We have totally flipped and phased that whole thought process out. But I don't feel like people enjoy the game more because now the quarterbacks are the face or any of these things. I don't know. I've never had a great handle on how to tell whether this offense thing is really driving the sport. But you're right. They think people like points.
Yes.
And they are going to give you all the points. I also think that part of it, too, is they try to keep these dudes healthy.
Yes,
right?
Which is the valid.
The scarcity at the position. Have I ever told you my belief that actually football clearly now has a fundamental flaw in its design?
Which is,
if there are so few capable quarterbacks, then something is wrong with the design of the game.
Right, but now we've got average quarterbacks throwing for 300-plus yards a game because of the aforementioned changes.
But we all still think they're not good enough to actually get it done when you need it.
Interesting.
Right?
Like, who's an example?
Alex Smith, right? Alex Smith's a guy that can put up numbers and do these things. You can have a decent team, but we know when it comes down to it, he can't. Kirk Cousins, I still have on this list.
He's been good, Bomani.
No, I'm not saying he's been bad. I want to be clear. He's been better than I ever dreamed that he could be, right? And he's in a situation that's similar to what McLuhan said you had to give him. Give him a situation where everything around him is good and you'll be able to do some things. He still, though, does Kirk Cousins stuff, right? He still puts the ball on the ground. These guys don't catch him, but he does try to throw those interceptions. He puts his heart and soul into giving you a chance. He's like computer assistance. Right? Like, we're going to bring this game back close by the end if you let me try hard enough.
He is the best wide receiver core in the NFL.
He does.
In my opinion.
Oh, dude, his hustle, like, the way that he has managed all of this to get this bread and then wind up in what is as close to a perfect situation.
You have to respect that.
You got to respect it.
Did you see his inspirational speech? I wanted to send it to you.
I did not.
It was amazing.
It was actually good.
So I think your point is well taken about these quarterbacks who are throwing for insane yardage and, you know, throwing to wide open dudes, which, by the way, is the other element of this. And we should talk about that in terms of whether or not this is all going to change or is offenses are simply ahead of NFL defenses right now. It's very obvious when you watch teams like the Rams, the Chiefs, clearly.
Right.
But now, to me, when you watch some of these other teams, I think the Bengals is a good example of a team where Bill Lazor's doing a great job embracing some of the principles that make those Rams and Chiefs offenses better. One of that, you mentioned running backs are dying out. They don't run the ball anymore. On first down, it's long been the case. Analytics dudes have long been saying, hey, you guys should run the ball less on first down. But still, these old-fashioned coaches, pound, 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 3 yards, three. Now they're not doing it, right? And there's a lot more play action, a lot more pre-snap deception, motion, jet sweeps, whatever. All of that contrives to make defenses have no freaking idea what's going on.
Right.
That, I think, at some point is going to turn back. Okay, like at some point, we're going to start seeing defensive coordinators trying to dictate what offenses do, being a little bit more creative and deceptive on their side. But we're not there yet, right?
Yeah.
So right now, it is like the rules favor the offense, the fact that there are a few good quarterbacks help the offense, and then design favors the offense and coaching right now. But that might change at some point.
Yeah, and I will say I enjoy bringing in like the college offensive concepts.
It's great.
I love that stuff, right? Like, I think you're, I don't want to say it here, but let's just say I think you're absurd if you like college basketball more than you like the NBA. I think it's a reflection of something that is wrong with your soul in most cases.
I'm with you.
But I don't feel that way about college football. Like, yes. I think college football has some fundamental differences that provide for a more entertaining product in some ways. And so it's like, I do like them adding those things. And I do wonder, what will be the, like, paradigm shift on defense that makes this easier? Because I watch a lot of Big 12 football, and let me tell you, nobody's figured it out over there. Like, this idea that in the Big 12 they just don't play defense.
Right.
It doesn't, like...
Like, who's the Lincoln Riley of defense?
Yeah, like, but the idea that just somehow they don't play defense doesn't add up, right? Like, why would this one conference have no one that gets, like, talented players and they're able to play offense? No, man, they're out here trying to stop the offenses that are farther ahead of anybody else's, right? That's what the game is over there. And it's been like that now for like 15 years.
Yeah, it's in, okay, in the NFL, you've got much more talented guys on defense and smarter guys who hypothetically should be able to diagnose what's going on the field. But I think there needs to be like a paradigm shift. Like, you got to have defenses no longer assuming they're going to run it on play action. You got to, you know, much more pass oriented, rushing the passer and in coverage. If you watch the Chiefs-Patriots game, every time they got Mahomes and forced him into YOLO mode, as you said, they were doing, like, tricky stuff, sort of coverage blitzes and stunts, and things like that. Like, I think we're going to see more of that on defense. You see the Ravens, who might be the last consistent defense in the NFL right now, and they're playing the Saints, which is actually a really awesome game. That defense does a lot of that because they don't have super talented guys. So I do wonder if that's what we're going to start seeing, is a little bit more creativity on that side of the ball.
I will say, by the way, as I say, I don't really need all these points. Like, what I guess I don't need is average offenses that put up a lot of points, but I do thoroughly enjoy watching the Chiefs and the Rams. And the Chiefs are actually, like, how mad do you think Chip Kelly gets when he watches the Chiefs? Because the Chiefs have basically taken the Chip Kelly model, which is there's a surplus of these little fast guys. And yeah, they've got some physical shortcomings, but if you can get little fast guys in the right spaces, you can do amazing things. And that's what Andy Reid has done over there. He got all the little fast, like DeAnthony Thomas, the link between Andy Reid and Chip Kelly, the littlest fast guy.
Did you see what Albert Wilson did to the Bears?
Yes,
Hair to fourth, like a defense that was supposed to be one of the elite defenses?
Yes.
Completely destroyed them. Absolutely.
That last play that Albert Wilson had looked like when you play the video games on like rookie mode and it's set up to just give you like wide open alleys if you do this one thing. He just ran, and then boom, suddenly no one in the world was close to him.
So amazing.
But Reed's got those dudes out there, like Tyreek Hill, and it's just like, nobody can cover him. Like, Ramsey was like, I've never been this tired before, running after that little dude. I really stopped and thought about it. Who is supposed to be able to cover him?
Yeah, you can't. They give up on him. That was interesting. The Jags-Chiefs game, they did the right thing, which you also saw New England do, which is you just put two guys on Kelsey and press him and try to muscle him around because he's the key to that offense. Because you're going to get beat by Tyreek Hill.
I don't think two guys can check him. Because you got to, like, you go and you get all these, like, long corners. The Seahawks made this a thing, right? These long corners. So everybody's got these tall, gangly corners. Yeah. That does nothing with this dude, right? They can't even get a hold of him. It's like trying to like chase like a 4-year-old, right?
Jalen was playing 15 yards off of him by the end of the game, which I don't blame him.
You know, and he owned it. He was just like, yo, man, what else am I supposed to do with this cat? Like, I watched that. This is your single high safety. Dude, with a quarterback that can throw, like, who can get it in there that quick? There's nothing you can do with this.
The only thing you can do is what a few defenses have done successfully, which is you get to Mahomes. It's not about Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
That's about confusing and pressuring Mahomes. That's about sending corners after him, doing whatever it takes to throw him off. The problem is when you flush him out of the pocket, he's usually pretty good. He's still a rookie. He makes some mistakes, but I do think he's fantastic. And that's really the only thing you can do to him.
Every little fast dude in college right now got to be pointing at Tyreek Hill like that going to be.
You're going to see that in the draft.
Yeah. I mean,
100%.
I mean, well, like Tariq Cohen is basically like the idea that we can find one of those. But, I mean, this one is clearly rare.
Yeah.
It's Sammy Watkins, by the way, there. Number 3 receiver. In the perfect offense for him because he's like, I look like a wide receiver, but that's not really what I am. I'm kind of a running back type.
He's not great.
He's so talented, though.
Yeah. I mean, that offense will kill you 1,000 ways, though. That's the thing. It's like, and a lot of these offenses like that are right now, you know, because we've been saying, okay, I do believe you have to focus on Kelsey partially because Tyreek Hill is impossible to cover, partially because a lot of Andy Reid's play design does run through Kelce,
mm-hmm.
but it's not that easy to cover Travis Kelce either.
No, it's not.
He is probably, if not the best, the second best tight end in the NFL right now.
And he had a reality show, a dating show. Let us not forget this.
He hates it when people talk about that.
Really?
Oh, yeah, he really doesn't like it.
I am fascinated by the idea that he and Jason Kelce are brothers.
It's weird.
I asked this question all on Twitter one day. I was like, so does anybody know when Travis Kelce was radicalized? And
how far have you gone down the Travis Kelce, like, Instagram rabbit hole?
I've gone pretty far.
Okay.
Right? Like, we seem to be into a lot of the same things.
Yeah.
And,
that's what I was insinuating.
Yeah. I'm there. But some guy hit me up that I knew a little bit that apparently went to high school with him and been like, nah, this is what it is. Like, he was radicalized long ago. And I believe his brother was like, I played on the hockey team. He played on the basketball team.
So, I had a similar conversation with someone about Josh McCown recently.
Really?
Who is a wonderful human being. I don't know if you've ever...
I've been told.
Stuff comes out. Well, because, you know, it's always you hear, like, guys love him, and it's always like, well, you know, of course, sure,
right.
Whatever. But then you start hearing stories, and he starts... you know, he's like a super outspoken person,
right.
Politically as well and stuff. And then you see videos of him dunking and you're like, what's going on here? I feel like there's like a missing piece to this picture. And I can't remember if it was Andrew Hawkins or someone told me like, this started real young. Like, go down. So anyways, I think.
I did not realize.
We're really talking around a lot of things right now.
Oh, no, they know what we talk about. They know what it is. No. See, this is the thing I'm teaching Pablo on TV on stuff like that. Don't you worry. They know what it is. And with McCown.
He's very comfortable.
Yeah.
With different people.
And we love those guys. I love those dudes. I have all the questions in the world. Like, it was funny. I was watching Cole Beasley rap. Seen that?
Yeah,
and I realized
course.
That because he can rap. Like, he's not bad. All right. Like, anybody giving no record deal, but he's not bad. But what was clear to me, though, is his style is like so totally Eminem.
Right? Oh, like, so you're like, you grew up on.
Yeah, it's very much. And that's cool. There's no problem with that. But him rapping is not the indicator of the things that we are talking about with these other dudes.
No.
Right.
No, no,
like,
no,
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 we,
no,
we
no.
Talk, we're talking about something much different. It's like. Hearing Cass talk about Jerry West in the NBA. Cause like those dudes who grew up, like who lived their adult lives in the NBA, I am fascinated by like, how did this happen?
Yes.
What do your parents think about this? Is your dad like this? Right? That's what we haven't had yet. The one where we met a guy and this was his steez, and then you meet his dad and his dad shows up in like a Sean John sweatsuit cause he gets down like that too.
It was so confusing with McCown because have you seen him?
Yes.
Have you seen his hair and face
yes.
and general mien? And I think Hawkins, he was able to convey to me everything, the totality of what we're saying in a single sentence, which was, he grew up playing basketball.
Yep.
There you go. All right. Now I know. Got it.
Everything changes.
Open shut.
When a dude plays basketball. Because the thing about playing basketball is, so football teams are big enough for segregation,
mm-hmm.
right? The guys can park.
Not basketball.
Basketball, if you're going to be the white dude on the basketball team, man, like, either you're going to play on the all-white basketball team, or you're going to make some peace with, you know... Like, these cats, you gonna have to ride with them in the van. Like, you can sit over there and not listen to the music, or you can jam with everybody else.
This is part of the reason why Josh McCown is basically a $10 million assistant coach on the Jets right now,
yes.
and they want, I mean, this factors into why he has the longevity he has, I really believe, is the fact that he gets along with every single person on the football team.
Oh, by the way, he's from East Texas. Jacksonville.
Okay.
That gives me an understanding of who the people were that he was hanging out over in that space. And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, I get you. There was another guy I'm trying to think of who I was thinking, like Baker Mayfield is fascinating in this because I think Baker Mayfield's just showing up in any room whatsoever.
Yes.
And he's good. But when I saw the video of Baker Mayfield dancing, I was like, wait a minute. Like, you went to Lake Travis in Austin. I have no idea how this happens. Like, when your name is Baker Mayfield. Like, when were you radicalized? Not radicalized. I think he just learned how to go over and dap it up. Like, you ever seen a college basketball coach, like, in a gym to recruit?
No.
Like, I saw Roy Williams once in Durham going to recruit. And, Roy been doing this a long time, man.
Roy, it's all in the motion.
Yeah, Roy's like, hey, man, every day, like, this is my job. I recruit basketball players, right? He's like, ain't no gym that you can put him in. I did an interview once with Lou Holtz. This is about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, coach, how you doing? This is Bomani Jones. He's like, hey, what's your name? I was like, Bomani. Say it again. Bomani. One more time. Bomani. Okay. Man, that interview started, you would have thought I knew Lou Holtz for 30 years.
Really?
Oh, Bomani. Ah. This is, and he just kept going on and on. And then I thought about it, man. Bomani is so low on the list of difficult names that Lou Holtz has had to learn how to pronounce on a short, in a quick moment.
Yeah.
Right? Think about something like when he was recruiting at South Carolina, some of the names that they put before him that he had to get right before he went in to talk to mom. Bomani is, that's a breeze.
It's interesting how few NFL coaches I would put under this category.
Yes. Right? I don't understand that.
Well, I think a lot of them, well, I don't know, actually. I mean, man, I don't know. I think a lot of it depends on what position you come up coaching, certainly. It's the sort of different groups and classifications in NFL locker rooms. You're right. You can be in an NFL team and never hang out with another group, an entire position group, and you could never spend time together. And I think the coaches reflect that as
You know, Rob Bryan once worked as an assistant at a black college. Like, I think his first gig was, it might have been Tennessee State.
Does not surprise me.
Yeah, I want to do a documentary on Rob Ryan's year, right, at Tennessee State, because Rob Bryan is also Rex Ryan's brother.
Yeah.
He made some.
Love Tyrod, Rex Ryan.
He did.
Loved him.
And that's that. So. And that point there tied to the rest. People are strange, man. Yeah. Right? Like people are fascinating hodgepodges. I have a theory, though, on why he loved Tyrod. Defensive coordinators love them quarterbacks that can move because they cause them hell.
Because they know how hard they are.
They cause them hell. Think about it. Buddy Ryan had Randall Cunningham out there.
Okay.
And I'll just tell you, I feel pretty comfortable guessing who I think Buddy Ryan would have voted for. And he still would have tried to Randall Cunningham out there.
So we got Pete Carroll's got Russell Wilson. He's a defensive, although that was more of a John Schneider pick, but Pete Carroll, like, he's not an offensive guy, but he loves play action and like all the tricky stuff that confuses defenses. Who else?
What do you think? Who else is like?
Andy Reid has worked with a lot of.
Reid loves him. Reid is like, why would I not want somebody who has additional skills?
I love Andy Reid.
Yeah, I used to have more names on this list. Like, I used to really be able to rattle them off. But you give me some time, I'll think more about it. Like, we'll let the people. Jeff Fisher with McNair.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Hey, man, yeah, McNair. You know, it was all good back then. Think about how our impression of what Jeff Fisher is or isn't has changed since Steve McNair left the Tennessee Titans.
I cannot think of a single human being whose reputation has suffered more because of the success of the team he left than Jeff Fisher. Yes. Every time they do anything, it's just such a referendum. He made Todd Gurley bad.
Yes.
Like, that's shocking if you've watched Gurley. Right. It's shocking.
And we don't blame the offensive coordinator for this.
No.
We take it straight to the top.
But he asks for it. Did you see the other day? He was like, well, a lot of those guys were guys that I put that team together.
He's that guy?
And I was like,
oh, no, he can't be that guy.
I know. I think I memed it. I know. He's so easy to – he's an easy target.
7'9", man.
I know.
And it's also not his fault that people let him keep his job. Because that's what really got the hostility up is when we realized, yo, this dude hasn't done anything in 20 years almost, and he keeps his job.
Who's more of a finesser, him or Hugh?
Oh, see, the clock is always ticking on Hugh.
Hugh has risen rapidly in the finesse rankings of all the all-time ones.
Yeah, for keeping this job that he has now.
He didn't even want to play Baker.
Yeah, he is. Like, he's done that. Jeff Fisher, though, he's done it through stuff like being on the competition committee.
Yes, 100%.
And
the network.
Yeah, he's playing big. He's playing a macro level. And I think Hugh just looked up and was like, look, man, y'all just going to keep firing coaches forever? And he was the owner's hire. These other ones were not so much the owner's hire. He was the owner's hire, and I think the owner's ego is keeping him around. And they haven't been bad this year. He's going to get fired.
Will he? If they finish 8-8, does he get fired?
Here's what I think is interesting about whether or not to fire him. It was all set up for Todd Haley to whip this offense into shape and then take the head coaching job because he was brought in to fix the offense.
Mm-hmm.
And if he had to hand the offense over to somebody else, he could not claim credit for it. So it'd be like a Dirk Cutter situation with Lucky.
Right, you'll
claim that. Except Todd Haley can't stop being Todd Haley and do things like give Nick Chubb 5 carries.
What is up
weeks.
With that? The use of running backs in Cleveland.
He did this with Jamaal Charles in Kansas City early in his career. Just for some reason, you don't want to give your good guy the ball. I don't know. But then he was there. Greg Williams, who, by the way, should be Greg with 1 G and not 2, because if you're going to go in witness protection, go all the way and change your name too. But hey, they got a decent defense over there. Ty Haley is the weak link.
Can you imagine being Hugh Jackson and having Todd Haley and Greg Williams? Like, that's some Game of Thrones. That's like, you know, they are actively trying to murder you at all times.
Yes.
And he knows that.
It was very clear with Haley in Hard Knocks.
No
that he
question.
Was angling for this job.
No question.
You're not going to try to take my job. In
absolutely
my
undermining him. Yeah, you're right, though. He has been the weak link. That defense has been pretty good.
Last thing I want to ask while I have you here.
Okay.
You live in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Do the Chargers come up anywhere?
So I've been in LA for 2 years now. I have never seen a Chargers fan in the wild.
Wow.
Now, I didn't see a lot of Rams fans at first, but I'm starting to. And obviously a lot of that is a product of their success, which is ironic because the Chargers are actually a pretty good team. You know, the Rams are the best team in the NFL. But you saw like a push to promote them when they first came. Like I'll go to the grocery store and see Rams stuff on sale and Rams promotions. You're starting to see some of that happen organically. It's still less than the Raiders, which is the team that should be in Los Angeles. I see more Niners fans than Chargers fans. I have not been to a game at the stadium, but I hear it is a singularly depressing. I mean, it's always an away game and whatever
right.
team you could get like. The Vikings, and there'll be more Vikings fans
yeah.
in there. I mean, but I don't, was there anyone, when this happened, the decision to move the team, did you meet a single person who thought this would work?
Mm-mm.
Anyone?
I thought they had a chance if they moved to Orange County and called themselves like the California Chargers.
Okay.
You know, something like that, because look, they got a legitimate stadium issue in San Diego. Like this
yes.
was not a tenable situation anymore. But if you move to Orange County, you're in between the two, right?
Yes.
Like
you're a little not, politically different.
Yeah.
You can kind of angle for those
yeah.
fans.
And it's not just like a total rejection of
yes.
San Diego, which the move to Los Angeles was. No, like they didn't have a chance for this to be good, for this to make any sense. But I just can't imagine playing 16 road games. Cause that really is what it seems like they're doing.
It's crazy. And it's amazing that they're as good as they, I said this to you before. I actually think the Chargers are one of the more, maybe the most balanced team in the NFL. And Bosa's coming back. When that happens, they'll be really balanced. Phillip Rivers quietly having an incredible season, by the way.
Yes.
Should be an MVP candidate. He ranks in the top four in every statistical category. He's been amazing. But that said, it doesn't matter. They could win. I believe the Chargers could go to the Super Bowl and they still would not be able to grow a fan base in Los Angeles.
Like, I thought if they were going to put a team in LA, it had to be an expansion team. It had
yes.
to be. Because, right, so you are in
or
a city. Like, you are in a city with a lot of Raiders fans, right?
Yes.
Well, they've been rooting against the Chargers forever. Like, the Rams worked because even if they were older people, you had some people who, like, used to rock with the Rams. Like, they had
yeah.
something to kind of build from. You couldn't take a previous rival and put them in town and think that all of a sudden people were going to jump on board.
And the Rams were first, right? So they had first mover advantage. But the thing people don't understand about LA is, well, there's a few things. One, it's not a football town.
No.
Okay. By any, it's a basketball town. And two, you're not just competing with other sports. You're competing with LA.
It's like Miami.
Yeah. It's like, it's not, you know, it's not a city in America. I'm not going to name a city because I don't want some fan base yelling at me about how great their middle of America city is. So. But, it, you know, there's a lot of stuff to do, okay? And it's very spread out, and it's not consolidated, so you don't have that sort of energy that when you walk through Pittsburgh or whatever. I don't see that changing. Maybe with the Rams, they'll get a little bit of a fan base, but a second team? No way.
Well, in particular with, like, attendance, I look at that with Miami. It's like, okay. So I could spend 3.5-4 hours outside in the stadium, or I could do that on a beach.
Yes. Or you could do what you do when I go to Miami, which is sit in your hotel room and watch
yes.
television.
Yeah, like, that's the thing. You got to catch Miami at the right time in your life. Like, I think if I had caught Miami 6 or 7 years earlier, I'd have probably done it different. But I got to Miami right before I turned 33. And I was like, yeah, nah. And I got to go to work.
Yes.
I need to be spry and chipper, show people this shining face, you know?
I go to Joe in the Juice a lot, and then or your room service, and maybe I go to the gym if I'm feeling feisty.
I'll have to give you some off-the-beach restaurant recommendations, though. Like, I can get you a couple places you at
I'm
least got to
go by myself and sit on my phone.
I'm all good. Headphones on, dinner by myself. I got no problem with it.
It doesn't usually work out that way for me.
Yeah.
But I will take your recommendation.
I'm telling you, man, I won't steer you wrong. You down there, like, as people ask me all kinds of stuff. I'm going to Miami. What should I check out? You talked to the wrong dude. I got a couple restaurants for you.
But Yeah, I think the Miami-Los Angeles comparison is pretty good. I just don't, it's probably too late. So there's this reporting, right, from Seth Wickersham, saying that the owners, some of them are like, maybe this isn't working out. We're having trouble selling our PSLs, or I think they've lowered the target for what they want. I don't think they can throw in the towel at this point. It's too far along.
No, they've done it. They're here now. I don't know why they felt like they needed two. That didn't make it. That seemed to be the stretch. I don't know why they felt like they needed to. And now the Raiders are going to go to Vegas, where they're going to be playing a lot of road games at home.
Yes. I could see that actually working out a little bit better than Los Angeles, to be honest. You know, Vegas is a funny city. Everyone says, well, a lot of the fans will be tourists and stuff. But they actually do have a pretty condensed, and we saw this with the Golden Knights, I think.
Yeah.
You know, obviously there was a lot of freak things that happened there, and they did with them being as good as they were or whatever. But there is a local population that does want to rally around something.
Yeah, I think long term it'll work out for the Raiders in that. And I think that they will have a fan base that isn't even necessarily represented by who's at the stadium.
Yes.
But the problem's going to be if the Chiefs come play their game in Vegas. If I'm a Raiders fan, I got 8 chances to go see the Raiders. If I'm a Chiefs fan, I got 1 chance to go see the Chiefs. Who you think is going to pay more? The Chiefs fan is going to pay more. They're going to have questions about how many of those tickets they allow the casinos to buy.
Yes.
As they put them together with hotel packages and stuff like that. Like, it's going to be a fascinating one to see how that goes in terms of building an atmosphere.
Do you know how drunk that state, like, that's going to be, there's going to be at least 300 bachelor parties in that stadium at any one time.
There are a lot of bad ideas that people do not see coming. And the other part, Raiders fans, like the Raiders fans, they are coming. Like that core part, like the black hole types, don't you worry. They're on the way. That's a 30 or 45 minute flight on Southwest away. They are coming and it's going to be a lot.
Don't want to be on that flight.
No. Gosh, no. But all right. Ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. Do this a couple times a week. Thanks to Gabe Bassane. He handles everything behind the scenes. Mina Kimes, thank you. And tell the people about the Mina Kimes podcast.
Yes, thank you so much. I have a new podcast. It's NFL-focused. Drops every Wednesday now. And just look at my name, Mina Kimes. It's called The Mina Kimes Show. It's changed names a couple of times. And we settled on the very creative Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny.
Lenny, your dog.
Yeah, that's my dog.
This dog has become a celebrity of sorts.
He's recognized more than I am.
You and Pablo both do this thing on TV that I find interesting, which is y'all bring y'all's pictures from home. Like, I look up, I'm watching Highly Questionable, and there's a video of your dog on it. I'm like, you brought your own home movies to add to the production?
I do it because it bothers Dan.
I thought that he would be all on board with it.
Yeah, when did you get to the 7th time where I've worked in my dog video?
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
He's a star.
That'll do it. But no, thank you for joining us. Thanks to our sponsor, Indochino. Remember, subscribe to the podcast, ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to think that you are a hater. And we will talk to you guys next week. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.